infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Why don't you ask me what it feels like to be a freak?
The power of a new generation.
Everyone here is mad.
Greetings. You are listening to Savage Science Radio here at Jackalope 105 FM, and I am your host, Tracy Savage. Here's a little music to start tonight off just great.
Shake me down. Not a lot of people left around. Who knows now? Softly laying on the ground. Ooh. Not a lot of people left around. Ooh. Ooh. In my life, I've seen people walk into the sea just to find memories plagued by constant misery. Thrice cast down. Upon the ground, thrice cast down.
There's a lot of things in the news this week about space. There's always a lot of things in the news about space. But did you know that NASA has a plan for one-way ticket space colonization? Oh yeah, Space Family Robinson, okay? It's not just a cartoon. Everyone knows space is awesome. That's why aliens and the sun live there. But one drawback is that space is huge, annoyingly, impractically huge. The nearest planet is 24 million miles away. It takes 8 minutes to reach the Earth from the Sun. The Sun could have just blown up, and you wouldn't even know it until you finish reading this post and three others. And the rest of space is just, well, space. And it takes a long time to get to the good stuff, almost too long. That's why NASA, along with the Pocket Protector Warriors of DARPA, are spending some real time and money designing plans for space colonists to take one-way trips to spread the human species to far-flung space locales. The so-called 100-year Starship program is building the foundation for an interplanetary version of the Mayflower. Space colonists would head off into the cosmos with no real anticipation of returning to Earth. The program isn't some theoretical message board either. NASA is kicking in $100,000 for the project, which doesn't seem like a heck of a lot, and then here comes DARPA contributing an additional million, and that's recession money, by the way. There are no real details of what the project specifically hopes to accomplish, but the fact of the matter is our government is putting some real capital behind the idea of space colonization. I'm just going to hope they don't know something that we don't about the future habitability of this planet. And speaking of spaceflight, private spaceflight is ready to take off in this year, 2011. The space industry has never seen such a rich and varied commercial landscape as it does now. The private space industry has long been viewed as fledgling. But this once pejorative term has taken on new meaning this year as a roster of successes and fast-paced growth throughout 2010 suggests private spaceflight is ready to take off in 2011. Now this year we saw the very first launch of commercial space company SpaceX's Falcon 9 booster and later the first liftoff of the firm's Dragon spacecraft, which launched atop a Falcon 9 to Earth orbit and then was recovered from the Pacific Ocean. Another company, Virgin Galactic, achieved some major milestones including the first glide test of its suborbital space liner Spaceship 2. Multiple private sector space firms are moving into full power, going well beyond PowerPoints and hand-waving. Still, the coming year, according to experts and analysts contacted by Space.com, is likely to feature battles between same old space and the ascension of new space. Now, in the commercial landscape, the space industry has never seen such a rich and varied commercial landscape, said Carissa Bryce Christensen, managing partner of the consulting firm The Atari Group in Alexandria, Virginia. Quote, new markets are emerging and established ones are changing, unquote. Christensen said that entrepreneurs are testing new launch and on-orbit capabilities in the real world, trying to move beyond development and demonstration into a sustainable, profitable operation. Large firms are changing their game plans in response. The successes and setbacks of 2011 are going to make it the most interesting year in the history of commercial space, Christensen predicted. Commercial space is finally coming into its own, and 2011 represents a year of enormous potential for this developing industry, said David Livingston, founder and host of a radio/internet talk show, The Space Show. The key will be to systematically move forward, building success upon success, Livingston said. I believe the coming year will reward patience, achievable goals, business fundamentals, reasonable business risks, and a safety mindset. In terms of trends for the space industry, Livingston foresees a move away from big government programs in favor of economically managed and leaner commercial space ventures and projects. I believe this trend will continue through 2011 and beyond. That said, I do not think our space program should be one or the other, government or private, Livingston said. I believe we can now, more than ever, effectively create public/private partnerships to guide us into space and our future. The scheduled retirement of NASA's three-orbiter space shuttle fleet next year will also likely affect the landscape. I think the environment for 2011, although much improved from the religious war in 2010, will still see continued debate about the future direction of NASA with shuttle retirement, said Brett Alexander, president of Commercial Spaceflight Federation, an industry group that provides commercial spaceflight developers, operators, spaceports, suppliers, and service providers. Alexander thinks commercial space will be, quote, squarely in the spotlight, unquote, with an expected ramp-up of both suborbital flight testing and multiple orbital launches and re-entries under NASA's Commercial Orbital Transportation Services, also known as COTS, C-O-T-S, partnership agreements with the U.S. industry. NASA's commercial crew and cargo program is investing financial and technical resources to stimulate efforts within the private sector to develop and demonstrate safe, reliable, and cost-effective space transportation capabilities. So, with the steady progress on the technical front, it should help to solidify NASA's new direction to develop commercial capabilities, Alexander said. 2010 was the year that war broke out between commercial and cost-plus space, observed Jim Munsey, president and founder of Polispace, an independent space policy consultancy based in Alexandria, Virginia. A rational White House, which nobody can accuse of having ideological bias in favor of commercial business and privatization, decided that the nation couldn't do much, let alone everything, the traditional way, Munsey said. To actually use the International Space Station and explore space, the private sector needed to play a greater role in both. Munsey said that as nasty and counterintuitive as the long debate of 2010 was, next year, especially in the context of the new Congress, which has vowed to cut government spending, as we all know, we'll see the rubber hit the road in several fronts of this war. For 2010, Munsey forecasts, first, at least two companies that operate suborbital reusable launch vehicles will fly science payloads for NASA, and piloted vehicles will have their first flight tests. Second, a SpaceX Dragon will carry a mammal to low Earth orbit and possibly to the International Space Station. Third, the effort to build a commercial crew spacecraft will move forward while overall budget pressure on NASA will slow down Florida Senator Bill Nelson's grand compromise, which, among other things, gave money to commercial companies and NASA to develop and build new rockets. Next, the Commercial Space Launch Amendment Act's informed consent, quote-unquote, regime for Federal Aviation Administration regulation of commercial human spaceflight will clash with some politicians' desire to kill commercial crew efforts. And, in the end, the fight over human rating of commercial crew will get heated, as will a scrap for control over this rating between NASA's Johnson Space Center and the agency's Kennedy Space Center. It looks like there's going to be an awful lot of arguing, and we're going to be bringing it all to you right on this show. Not a prediction, but a hope, Munsey said, is that, quote, Republicans will remember they like the private sector and stop mindlessly bashing commercial. Rand Simberg, a space policy and technology consultant and former aerospace engineer, isn't optimistic that Republicans will get fully behind commercial space. Despite the growing confidence in the ability of the commercial sector to do human spaceflight, the incoming Republicans may continue to wage war on the new NASA direction in opposition to their usual stated principles of free enterprise and competition for no reason other than it came from a weakened Obama White House, Simberg said. Oh, no, not more political controversy and flip-flopping. Overall, next year may be the year that business as usual collides with budgetary reality, he predicted. Simberg said that even the most pork-devoted politicians will have to recognize that the only way for NASA to have a viable human spaceflight program going forward is to rely on fixed-price launch contracts from new, more cost-effective providers for the now mundane task of simply getting astronauts to orbit and back. On the suborbital front, Simberg said that 2011 may be the year that regular flights of fully reusable vehicles, both horizontal and vertical landing, will take off. That being the case, Simberg added, such suborbital flights will start to develop the experience in high-tempo launch operations that will inform the eventual development of cost-effective space transport all the way to orbit. Likely to be a nexus of private sector space action is Spaceport America, now under construction near Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. Yes, that's the name of a real place, Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. Virgin Galactic will run commercial operations from Spaceport America, with billionaire founder Sir Richard Branson recently setting his sights beyond suborbital passenger takeoffs. Virgin Galactic has shown in the past years how private sector investment and innovation can lead to rapid transformation of stagnant technologies, Branson said. We are now very close to making the dream of suborbital space a reality for thousands of people at a cost and level of safety unimaginable even in the recent past. We know that many of those same people, including myself, would also love to take an orbital space trip in the future, Branson added. So we are putting our weight behind new technologies that could deliver that safety whilst driving down the enormous current cost of manned orbital flight by millions of dollars. Now, earlier this month, Branson revealed that Virgin Galactic will be supporting work done by Sierra Nevada Space Systems, SNC, and Orbital Sciences Corporation, OSC, on commercial space vehicles for NASA's Commercial Crew Development Program. Both SNC and OSC are pursuing vehicle designs featuring reusable lifting wing bodies and runway landings, which Virgin Galactic sees as possibly revolutionizing orbital space flight. Now, Rick Holmans, executive director of the New Mexico Spaceport Authority, said that the pace of activity continues to pick up throughout the industry, and Spaceport America is no exception. In 2011, we expect to be in the midst of our pre-operations phase, hiring contractors, developing policies and procedures, and conducting all kinds of tests and drills to ensure we are ready to go operational in 2012, Holmans said. Holmans said that from the inquiries they have received, he anticipates Spaceport America's vertical launch area should be very busy in 2011. Other companies such as UP Aerospace or UP Aerospace, Armadillo, and other operators have already inquired about availability and schedule, he added. I see 2011 as the year to get ready for 2012, when I predict we will have our first commercial launches from Spaceport America, Holmans said. Now, would you want to be one of these guinea pigs shot up into space, you know, first commercial orbital, you know, crew? I'm not quite sure if I'm ready for that. I think maybe I'll watch it on YouTube or TV or the internet first until they, you know, work out all the bugs. But there's a lot of people who aren't as cautious as I am. These one-way missions that we were talking about to Mars, would you boldly go? Well, guess what? Crisscrossing the galaxy a la Captain Kirk may sound heroic, but would you volunteer for a Star Trek-like voyage if you knew you could never come home? Going back to that first story, in a special edition published back in October, the Journal of Cosmology detailed how a human mission to Mars could be a reality in as little as 20 years. That's what that story was about. But the complexity, risk, and cost of getting astronauts there and back have kept the idea firmly on the ground. Well, you know, duh. So a few scientists proposed an unconventional idea: send astronauts, but simplify the flight by making it a one-way trip. The astronauts would be settlers as well as explorers. A return trip is massively more difficult than the voyage there, partly because the fuel and supplies to get home would have to make the round trip from Earth. Now, it's just a fanciful idea at this time, but the editors say they were stunned when more than 500 email messages came from people around the world volunteering to be the first Mars colonists. Student soldiers, law enforcement officers, nurses, and space enthusiasts, young and old, wrote in saying they'd be happy to leave their lives on Earth for the chance to be pioneers. The response was so great, in fact, that the journal announced Thursday that it would actively seek volunteers and supporters for a Mars mission. It encouraged the public to sign up on the journal's homepage or email them. It's going to happen some way or another sometime, and it may as well happen now. I don't see any sense in delaying it, said R.J. Musat, a 56-year-old computer operator at Cuyahoga Community College in Cleveland, Ohio. Musat, who was among the hundreds of volunteers to email the journal, said he's been interested in exploring Mars since he read Robert Heinlein's sci-fi novel Stranger in a Strange Land in the 1960s. Among his self-described credentials, a familiarity with computers, the ability to execute high-tech tasks, and a genius-level IQ. When asked why he would be willing to leave his son, family, and friends behind, he said, "Christopher Columbus did it. It's a pioneering thing because it's there," unquote. In an email to the Journal, an honorably discharged Navy veteran said he should be a crew member because, aside from his military background, he has never fathered a child and has no commitments on Earth he wouldn't be able to leave behind. "Sign me up for the adventure of a lifetime," he said. Many who claim no relevant training at all added their names to the list. "I think I would be a great candidate because I could help people cope with depression. I'm continuously optimistic and happy," wrote an 18-year-old from Alaska. Well, the one-way mission proposal titled To Boldly Go, A One-Way Human Mission to Mars, is part of a book published by the Journal that combines the work of more than 70 NASA scientists. The Human Mission to Mars, Colonizing the Red Planet, is billed as a step-by-step how-to series on going to Mars. "I do think there is still part of the human spirit that is willing to explore new places and take risks," said Dirk Schulz-Makuch, professor of earth sciences at Washington State University and co-author of the One-Way Mission Proposal. In the proposal, Schulz-Makuch and Paul Davies, a physicist and cosmologist at Arizona State University, suggest sending 4 astronauts to Mars to stake out the first human outpost there. The scientists emphasize that it wouldn't be a suicide mission, quote-unquote. Instead, the volunteers would live out their lives on Mars, building the first hub for colonization. "The people going would understand that they would be there until the end of their days," said Schulz-Makuch, "but we would not be abandoning them. The planners on Earth would have to supply them. The astronauts would regularly be provided with basic necessities from Earth, but would have to become increasingly successful at harvesting and exploiting resources available on Mars," scientists said. Lana Tal, the editor of the Journal of Cosmology, said that when it first published the report, the journal did not solicit volunteers in any way and never expected to receive a single message from a would-be explorer. "When we first began receiving them, we thought they were not serious, that it was some type of joke," she told ABCNews.com in an email. "When they kept coming and coming, it became clear that most of these men were extremely serious." However, Tal did say that not all of the messages were written in earnest. "Some were funny. We even received emails from women volunteering their husbands," she said. Well, that brings us to our special presentation tonight, X-1. Mars is Heaven by Ray Bradbury, adapted by Ernest Canoy, is our special treat tonight. When the first Earthmen landed on Mars, they discovered their fondest memories of Earth recreated upon the Martian surface. As the astronauts are welcomed to Mars by their own dead relatives and friends from years gone by, is Mars truly heaven or a hellish trap designed to gain the astronauts' trust? Stay tuned.
Countdown for blastoff. X-5. -4, -3, -2, X-1. Fire! From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future. Adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years. On 1,000 maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company presents X-1. Tonight's story, Mars is Heaven. When the first space rocket lands on Mars, what will we find? Only the ruins of a dead and deserted planet? Or will there be life? Intelligent life in some strange form that we can only imagine? Will we be welcomed with open arms? Or will the Martians treat us as invaders? Only one thing is certain. Someday, a giant metal ship will take off from Earth to travel through the black velocities, the silent gulfs of space, to descend at last into the darkness of the upper Martian atmospheres. And on that day, man will finally know the answers the day we first land on Mars.
Now hear this, now hear this. Approaching critical deceleration. Fasten gravity suits. Stand by to land.
There it is. We've intersected the course vector, sir.
All right, Mr. Lustig. Over to manual control.
Aye, sir.
Masters, sound general quarters.
Aye, sir.
Mr. Lustig, what do you make of the terrain?
There seems to be a heavy ground, Miss Captain. We won't be able to use the infrared lights.
And we'll have to come in on radar.
Isn't that a little risky, sir? Landing in the dark?
I'd rather run the danger of a blind landing, Lieutenant, than come in without the cover of darkness. Remember, we don't know what kind of reception is waiting for us down there.
Airspeed 500. Altitude now 4,000.
Bridge to engine room. Stand by for deceleration. Fire forward tubes 1 and 3. Steady as she goes, Mr. Lustig.
As she goes, sir.
Airspeed 100. Altitude 1,000.
Radar indicates a level stretch dead ahead, sir.
Skids down.
Skids checked.
Altitude 500. 4. 350. 3.
Up a point now. All right. Let's set her down. Cut the power. Masters, pipe battle stations.
Aye, sir.
All secured, sir.
Well, gentlemen. Gentlemen, we're now on Mars. April 20th, 1987. 4:33 Greenwich time. Enter that in the log, Masters.
Aye, sir.
Well, gentlemen, it's less than 2 hours till dawn. As soon as it's light, we'll send out a landing party. Masters, get me an all-over hookup.
We're all set, Captain.
Now hear this. All right, men. The smoking lamp is lit. Well, we're on Mars. The first man shipped from Earth to land here. We don't know what we're going to find or what dangers that we may face. We're 17 men on an alien world. And it's up to us whether we ever get home again. The next few hours should tell the story. And I want instant obedience to all commands. I'll court-martial the first man who doesn't jump to when he's ordered. And one other thing. We may be on Mars, but this is still a United States naval vessel. Officers will conduct a personal and weapons inspection in 1 hour. That's all.
An inspection, Captain? Now?
Mr. Lustig, we've got an hour and a half to sweat out before we find out what's outside that airlock. I'd rather have a man worried about his stripes than about what's waiting outside on Mars.
Now hear this. Landing party report to forward airlock. Captain Black, Lieutenant Hingston, Lieutenant Lustig, and Dr. Horst report immediately to forward airlock. It's now landing time, -5.
Well, they're paging us. You ready, Dr. Horst?
Yes, Mr. Lustig. As ready as I will ever be.
Come on, let's get in the lock. Hingston, Lustig, and Horst reporting in the airlock.
Very well, sir. The captain will join you.
4 minutes to go. At least the captain would get here.
What difference does it make?
I just want to get it over with, that's all. Anybody got a cigarette?
Yeah, I think you're smoking too much, Lieutenant Lustig. Are you nervous?
Lay off with your horse.
Wondering what's hidden outside underneath that ground mist? I've been giving it some thought. It'll be very interesting to find out. A very unusual planet, Mars.
Why?
It has an atmosphere. A wonderful thing, an atmosphere. Where you find one, you find life.
You mean Martians? What do you think they'll look like?
Who knows? Intelligent life can take many forms.
You mean they may have green skins and eyes on stalks or something?
The comic book conception is possible, of course. Or they may have developed power beyond us. Perhaps they have a science that can produce weapons far more dangerous than our atomic missiles.
You think we may have to fight our way out?
After all, we are invaders.
I hear this. Landing time minus two.
All right, all right. We heard this. You know what I'd like to find outside that airlock? Good old Illinois. Ever been there, Lustig?
Only Chicago.
Well, you ought to see my hometown. Green lawns, big white houses.
Sounds like my hometown.
My grandmother used to have one of those iron deer on the lawn. Every Halloween, we'd paint another color. One time, we painted it black and white like a Holstein cow.
Where does your family live, Dr. Horst?
I have no family. When I was a child, they were gassed to death in the Dachau concentration camp.
Tough.
No, it has its advantages. I have no ties on Earth. Nothing to lose now. I imagine I'm the only one on board who is free to enjoy our present peculiar position.
All right, masters, you can button it up now.
Aye, sir.
Well, gentlemen, check your sidearms. In 1 minute, we'll be the first men to set foot on Mars. Quite an honor, eh?
As long as the medals are not awarded posthumously.
Still uneasy, Dr. Horst?
Captain Black, I've been uneasy ever since I can remember. On Earth and on Mars.
Well, 30 seconds. Give me the intercom phone, Lustig.
Yes, sir.
Masters?
Aye, sir.
Battle stations are to be manned till we return. If we're not back in 2 hours, I want no rescue party sent out. Blast off and save the ship, you understand?
Aye, sir.
All right. 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1. Lustig, open the outer airlock.
Aye, sir. It's fresh air.
Let's go. All right, now, take it easy. It's too dark to move fast.
Quiet, isn't it? Not even a wind. Can't see anything from this ground, Mr.
Quiet.
We don't know what's out here. All right, come on.
What the... Quiet!
Captain, I could swear that... That sounds like a rooster.
I don't hear it anymore.
Very homely but unlikely sound. A rooster crowing on Mars?
Hingston.
Aye, sir.
Set that machine gun 25 yards to the flank. We'll stay here till the ground mist lifts.
Aye, sir.
What do you make of the ground, Horst?
Grass. Plain grass. You can see some large foliage there where the mist's thinned out.
What the... Hingston, hold your fire, you fool!
I hit it, Captain.
What?
Some kind of wild animal. I hit it. I could see the tracers, but it's still standing.
Come on, Horst. Doctor, where are you?
Up ahead, admiring the wild animal.
Careful, Horst. Wait for us.
Don't worry, Captain. It's an iron deer. A lawn ornament.
Well, that's impossible.
It's hollow. Interesting, isn't it? A whitewashed Victorian iron deer sitting on a lawn in the middle of Mars.
I don't understand.
Look around. The mist's lifting.
Hey, Captain, look there. It's a house, a regular old-fashioned house.
But, sir, on Mars.
Good Lord. I haven't seen carved scrolls and gingerbread like that in years. Look at that port swing. The geraniums.
There. I told you it was a rooster, Captain.
Give me the glasses, Lustig. I want to take a look through that front window. Well, there's an upright piano. Some sheet music on it. Lustig, it's beautiful Ohio.
It can't be, sir.
Horst, do you think that civilization of two planets could be identical?
I don't know. That specific variety of geraniums is only 50 years old on Earth.
Is it logical that they should develop in Mars? How about that port swing and the piano and beautiful Ohio? Why, it's impossible.
Captain Black, this looks like the town I was born in.
Well, it looks like my hometown, too.
I thought of something, sir. It's the only solution. Maybe we're not the first ship to reach Mars from Earth.
Don't be ridiculous, Lustig.
Oh, how else can you explain it? Suppose some scientists got together. They invented some spaceship and planted a colony here. That's the only answer.
That's impossible, Lustig. Been space travel, it couldn't be secret. Do you have any idea what ships cost, what industrial power is needed?
No, there's got to be some logical reason.
I think perhaps we might find out, Captain. The light just went on in that house.
Kingston, cover that door with the machine gun.
Aye, sir.
All right, come on, Horse. We're going to ring that doorbell. There's got to be a scientific answer to all this.
And there's something moving in there.
Stand back, Horst. Give me a clear shot.
Are you sure a bullet can stop a Martian?
Steady now.
Can I help you? If you're selling anything, it's much too early.
No, wait just a minute. What town is this?
What do you mean? Are you census takers?
No. We're strangers here. We want to know how this town got here.
Is this a game?
No, it's not a game. We're from Earth.
From where?
From Earth.
Do you mean out of the ground? Are you sure you're feeling well?
Madam, we came in a flying ship across space. We're from the third planet, Earth. This is Mars. Now do you understand? Mars.
You go away now, you hear? I'll call my husband from upstairs and he'll chase you. Go on.
But this is Mars, isn't it?
This is Green Lake, Wisconsin in the United States of America. Bounded on the east by the Atlantic and on the west by the Pacific. Now go away. Goodbye.
Horst, do you suppose it's really possible? I've got to find out more about this.
I told you I'd call my husband. Now you go away.
You've got to tell me one thing first. What year is this?
Year? 1928, of course. For goodness sake.
You hear that, Horst? And we know it's 1987. And we know this is Mars. Of course, is it possible that we got fouled up, made some tremendous blunder, circled around and landed back on Earth?
In 1928?
Well, maybe some switch in time or dimension. Could we have shifted somehow, gone backward in time? Oh, Horst, this won't hold water. It's not logical. We checked every mile. We went past the moon, out into space. We're on Mars. Lustig out at point. Kingston in the rear. Keep that gun at half load.
Aye, sir.
Horst, there's got to be some cold, logical solution.
Captain!
What?
That house down the street, the white one with the green shutters.
Lustig, what's the matter?
I never thought of... Thank God!
Lustig, come back here!
He's running for that house.
That crazy fool, after him, quick!
Lustig, stop!
Come down off of that porch!
Grandpa!
Lustig, what the devil do you think you're doing?
Albert! Oh,
Grandma! Grandpa, it is you.
Lustig, what is going on here?
Albert, it's been so many years.
How you've grown, boy.
It's so good to see you.
Lieutenant Lustig!
Oh, Captain, Grandma, I want you to meet my friends. This is Captain Black. Captain, I want you to meet my grandfolks.
Howdy. Any friend of Albert's is a friend of ours.
How long have you been here, Grandma?
Oh, a good many years. Ever since we died.
Ever since you what?
Oh, yes, sir. They've been dead 30 years.
What?
Oh, now, don't you trouble yourself. It's all right. We're alive again, that's all.
You mean to tell me that Mars is heaven?
Oh, nonsense, no. All we know is here we're alive again. And who are we to question God's infinite ways?
Well, Lustig, we're going back to the ship.
But, Captain, I want to talk to my grandfather.
Lieutenant Lustig, I don't like any part of this. You'll come back with us if I have to club you and carry you.
I see.
Now, let's go! Heaven only knows what they've run up against back at the ship. Horst, look at that crowd around the ship.
Looks like we're being welcomed with a celebration, Captain.
Celebration! They've abandoned ship. Every port is open. No guard set. You, masters!
Hiya, Captain. Meet my old dad. Dad, that's Captain Black. He's not a bad guy for an officer.
Abba! Kingston!
What, sir?
Bring that band back. Use force if you have to.
Excuse me, sir. There's my Uncle George.
Kingston!
I'll be right back, Captain Uncle George.
What the devil is going on here?
Don't you understand, sir? They've all found friends and relatives. They're all here.
You're right, Captain. I've counted. The whole crew's out in the crowd.
But I gave orders. Definite orders.
You don't understand, Captain.
I understand mutiny. I don't care how many relatives show up. I'll have discipline.
John! Johnny, you old son of a gun.
It's you. Edward.
Yes.
It can't be.
Oh, of course it is. Johnny,
Ed.
You old...
Ed, Dr. Horst, this is my brother, Edward.
How do you do?
Hello, sir.
It's wonderful to see you, Edward. Look, I've got to get back to my ship.
Oh, Johnny, wait. I almost forgot. Mom's waiting at home.
Mom?
Yeah, and Dad, too.
Mom and Dad are alive? Then you're real, Ed.
Well, of course. Don't I feel real? How's that, huh?
Why, Ed. Ab!
We've got lunch for you, Donnie. Mom's making corn fritters.
Dr. Horst, haven't you found anybody?
No, no, Captain. I have nobody.
Well, then you come on home with me, right, Ed?
Why, sure.
Horst, you wouldn't believe it, but it's been 35 years since I had Mom's corn fritters. By George, 35 years.
In the kitchen, so don't hold back, Johnny. You too, Dr. Horst.
Well, Johnny, you're still in the Navy, eh?
That's right, Dad. I'm in command of the ship.
We're an old Navy family, Dr. Horst. All three of our boys in the service.
Yeah, Ed was the best pilot in the Pacific, too. What did happen, Ed?
What's the difference? I'm here now.
Yeah, but...
You know, it's almost perfect. All we're missing is your brother, Will. Then the whole family could be together.
Well, it won't be long, Mom. Will's in charge of the XR-54. Next rocket coming out to Mars.
Oh. Well, little Will. When does he leave, Johnny?
Well, the takeoff's scheduled for September, but It depends on what we report.
Oh, yeah.
There's no question about that now, huh?
No.
Christmas together again. That'll be something.
Sure will, yes, sirree. Well, this calls for a celebration. How about a little of the old dandelion wine, eh, Johnny?
Now, Father, don't you go giving Johnny too much wine.
He's a big boy now, Mother. Well, sir, isn't everything just fine? Just fine.
Oh, I'll be melancholy too.
All right, play that one again, will you, Ed?
Oh, sure.
Well, Dr. Horst, what are you doing sitting over here alone? What do you think of my little family?
Very nice.
You know, I can't understand why you didn't find any folks here, Dr. Horst. It's just a shame everybody else is so happy.
Well, I never remembered my family, Mrs. Black. All I know is they were gassed at Dachau during the Second World War. When I was liberated, I was in delirium 3 months. I cannot remember anything before then. A psychiatric phenomena.
Well, that's terrible. Isn't there anything anybody can do?
I don't want to remember. I have not had a pleasant life. I prefer to be free of emotional entanglements. They interfere with a scientific approach.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Horst.
Oh, I'll get it.
That's our ring, long and three shorts. I remember that.
Well, maybe we'd better call it a night. You must be getting tired, Johnny.
I'd better be going back to the ship.
Nonsense. You stay the night. We insist.
I just couldn't rest thinking of you all alone on that ship.
I'll be all right. Well, good night.
Oh, wait a minute, Dr. Horst. That phone message was for you.
Me?
Yes, that's right. A message from Anna.
Anna? I don't...
Well, there. She must be an old friend. Isn't that nice?
I don't... You sure it was for me? I don't remember any Anna.
Well, she asked if you were better.
Perhaps she's someone who knew you at Dachau.
Anna?
She said she's coming over here first thing in the morning. So you'll have to stay over.
Yes,
well,
but...
that settles it, then. You stay here, Horst. You can bunk with me in my old room.
Yeah, but, Johnny, we thought you'd like to be with Edward.
So you could talk the way you're used to.
Well, we can't put Dr. Horst on the daybed. I think we'd better share the room tonight. Be plenty of time for talking, Ed.
Yes, I guess so.
Well, I suppose I better drop back to the ship. You know, Ed, security check.
What? Why do you have to do that here?
I don't know, Mom. There's no good reason, I guess. Suppose we skip it tonight, huh? Well, good night, everybody.
Oh, it's good to have you home, Johnny.
It's good to be home, Mom.
Black.
Hmm?
You asleep?
No, I've been thinking about what we were expecting. Green-skinned Martians. All the time there was only Mom and Dad and Edward waiting. That's funny what tricks your imagination can play on you. Well, I guess Mars is heaven, Horst.
You know, I've been thinking about Martians, too.
Hmm?
Captain, just suppose Suppose there were Martians, right, and they saw us land, and suppose they thought of us as invaders. What would be the best weapon they could use against our atom bombs, huh?
I don't see what you're getting at.
They would want to disarm us first, huh? To wipe out all suspicion, to make us feel at home. Captain, suppose this house isn't real. Suppose the people are just images stolen from our own memories by Martians, created for us by telepathy, hypnotism.
Oh, that's the craziest theory I ever heard.
Maybe that's why there was no one for me, because in all my life there is no happy memory, no real loved person, not even my mother. I don't remember her, only the piles of rotting corpses at Dachau. There was no happy emotion for these people to recreate.
How about that phone call? Anna?
Yes, Anna. I didn't remember who she was, but I do now. I just remembered. When I was freed from Dachau, sick, delirious, I raved about a wonderful, kind nurse named Anna that took care of me.
Well, there you are. It's logical. She's coming to see you tomorrow.
But there was no Anna. I'd been nursed by a man.
What?
Anna was only a dream. And there's only one way they could have learned about her, by reading my subconscious mind.
That's impossible, Horace.
Why? A whole crew was thinking of home. Suppose the Martians read our minds.
Yes, but if there are Martians...
If there are, they have us separated. Each man in a different house, sleeping, trusting. No one at the guns.
I left my pistol downstairs. Do you think there's something to this, Horst?
It's a perfect trap, Captain. Who would suspect his own mother, his grandparents? How easy. Just a knife in the heart of each sleeping man.
That's impossible, Horst. But we've got to get back to the ship.
Listen, the crickets have stopped.
Come on.
We don't know when they change back to whatever they really are.
All right, careful.
Where are you going, John?
Ed, we wanted a drink of water. That's all, Ed.
You're not thirsty, John. You don't want a drink.
Look out!
You don't want a
His
drink.
His face! It's changing! He's a Martian!
Run, Horst! Run!
You can't get away, John.
This way, Horst! Horst, where are you?
Hello! Hello! Can you hear me, Earth? This is Captain John Black, the XR-53, calling for Mars. I've locked myself in the ship, but they've crippled it. I can't take off or fire the guns, and they're coming for me now, the Martians. I'm all alone here. All the rest are dead. Hinkston, Lustig, Dr. Horst. Poor Horst, he didn't even reach the door. Listen! Listen! They're trying to break through the hull. Edward and Mom and Dad and all the folks. But they're changing now. They're melting and changing back into... They're Martians, can you understand? Martians, not men. They made us think that Mars was heaven and we fell into the trap. Can you hear me, Earth? You've got to stop the next rocket. Listen, tell my brother Will. Tell my brother not to come. They'll trap him too. They'll kill them all. Hello? Hello? Can you hear me, Earth? This is John Black on Mars. Hello, Earth? This is John Black on Mars. Hello, Earth? Hello, Earth?
Tonight, X-1 has brought you the science fiction classic, Mars is Heaven, written by Ray Bradbury and adapted for radio by Ernest Kenoy. Featured in the cast were Wendell Holmes as Captain Black and Peter Capell as Dr. Horst, with Bill Zuckert as Masters, Bill Lipton as Hinkston, Margaret Berlin as the old lady, Bill Griffiths as Edward, Ken Williams as Lustig, Ethel Everett as Mom, and Edwin Jerome as Dad. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Fred Way and is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production. X-1.
Well, after that story, are you still willing to jump on the bandwagon and send your email in to be the one-way ticket first colonization group to go to Mars? Might be a little bit more than some hydroponic crop harvesting going on there. Earth might not look so bad when you think about it in that respect. Anyway, that does it for Savage Science this week, and hope you have a wonderful week. Thank you to Nick Palucco for the great show graphics, and Dennis Baum for the fantastic intro I use every single week, and Hawk Productions. Keep your powder and your pants dry, and happy trails until we meet again.